Welcome to On The Moneyline, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Newsom, and I'm here to break down UFC Kansas City, which has got a real good headliner in the featherweight division between Max Holloway and Arnold Allen. But just before we get into the breakdowns, really quickly, as always, we've got a Baze AI recap that's going to be on our YouTube channel in the Baze AI playlist on the YouTube channel. That's just to recap the AI, the UFC prediction software, and how it performed last weekend at UFC 287. It's got a good mix of some real good value plays and some solid winners as well. So if you are interested in the AI and the UFC prediction software, then make sure you check that out at youtube.com/MMAPlay365. But for right now, we're going to fly straight into the breakdowns, and we start in that real good main event that I've already mentioned. We've got Max Holloway versus Arnold Allen, and this really is a massive step up for Arnold Allen, but a deserved step up as well. Arnold Allen's unbeaten in the UFC. His last loss was in Cage Warriors before he came into the UFC. He's on a 12-fight winning streak. Some of those fighters were competition that, you know, he should have been beating on the way up, but you look at his last three wins, he's got obviously the win against Calvin Kattar, which I do wish that we got to see more of, but he's got that win against Sadiq Youssef and Dan Hooker as well. So those are three real good names on his last three fights. And the Calvin Kattar one is really, like I've just said, I really wish that we'd got to see more of that fight. Obviously, it ended with the Calvin Kattar injury, but you know, we've got to take from that fight what we did see. And personally, I thought Arnold Allen, I mean, the initial minute or so was very, you could tell both fighters were trying to feel each other out, you know, get the reads before committing. But Arnold Allen was actually starting to turn it up in those moments just before that the fight did end. And Allen looked like he was on his way to start piecing Calvin Kattar up. Now, would he have done that for a full five rounds? We don't know. You know, Arnold Allen hasn't fought five rounds in the UFC, so it is one of those question marks that we are unsure about. You know, Allen might have looked great in that fight in the opening two or three rounds, but then what happens in round four and round five, we just don't know because we haven't seen it from Allen. Whereas Max Holloway on the other side, his last 11 UFC fights have been five round fights, so this is a fighter that's absolutely built for these five round main events and the championship fights. Now, as for how both of these fighters match up against each other, you know, they're both predominantly boxers. I think Allen might probably kick a little bit more than Holloway, but both fighters do the best work with the boxing. If any fighter is more likely to mix it up, I would probably edge towards over Arnold Allen, potentially shooting a takedown, trying to get the fight down to the mat. But Max Holloway's takedown defense is almost godlike. If you do take him down, he's going to be able to get back up to his feet. His get-up game is almost godlike too. So the fight, in my opinion, is going to be won and lost on the feet. You know, you do a good job convincing me otherwise. So in regards to where both fighters stand with each other, I feel like it's tough to really side with Arnold Allen here. And listen, the last time Arnold Allen fought and had that step up in competition was against Calvin Kattar last time out. I bet Arnold Allen there at plus money. In fact, that was the bet that got me suspended from William Hill's MMA markets. So another bookie that suspended me or limited my account. It's one of the two. I can't remember which one, but, you know, stupid nonetheless that the bookies even do that. So I actually bet Arnold Allen last time out. But this time against Max Holloway, I'm just struggling to get behind him from a pick perspective, because the thing is with Holloway, at some point he's going to fall off a cliff. And I don't mean that in like a disrespectful way, obviously. Like, Max Holloway is still one of the best fighters in the world, but just like every fighter eventually falls off a cliff and they start to decline. And with Holloway, again, there's nothing that shows me in tape that he's about to do that. A gut feeling is it might be within the next two or three fights, but there's no substance behind that. I just feel, though, that Holloway, he's not, for this particular fight, he's not shown any signs of decline. He's battering every single fighter that he fights, apart from Alexander Volkanovski, who is the pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world. And, you know, we just saw him step up against Islam Makhachev and saw what Volkanovski can do. So it's absolutely no, you know, knock on Max Holloway, the fact that he can't beat Alexander Volkanovski, because apart from, you know, Islam Makhachev in the division above, it appears that no one can beat Alexander Volkanovski. But anyway, outside of Volkanovski, Holloway's still battering everyone he's fought. Last couple of fights, he absolutely battered Yair Rodriguez. He absolutely battered Calvin Kattar. So he's still got what he's got in the division. It's just he's struggling to become the champion just because there's one fighter in that division that he cannot beat. But that fighter in the division absolutely smokes everybody else in that division. So again, it's not a knock on Holloway. I still think Holloway is going to have that five-round experience over Arnold Allen. I think Holloway is going to have a huge volume advantage here. I still think Holloway is durable to take Arnold Allen's shots. I think Arnold Allen in the early moments in this fight, he might get off on some good shots against Holloway. But the thing is with Holloway, it's very rare that we see him dominated. Even in his last fight with Alexander Volkanovski, you know, he was massively competitive. And it was just a fight where Holloway stood his ground and was able to compete with the best in the division. And Arnold Allen just isn't on that level with Alexander Volkanovski. I still think Arnold Allen's going to have a good showing here. I still think he's going to be able to maybe steal a round, maybe steal two rounds at the most. But I just don't think he can steal more than two rounds. And I think two rounds is probably the maximum he's going to take anyway. I think Holloway is going to put some good pressure on him. I think he's going to have one of those performances where he's landing 200 significant strikes in the fight. I think Arnold Allen's going to see something here against Holloway that he's never seen before. Volume, pace, pressure, five rounds of cardio, solid cardio, doesn't slow down throughout the entire fight. And I think eventually that type of fighter that Max Holloway is going to start wearing on Arnold Allen the longer the fight goes on. If this was three rounds, then I think Arnold Allen would be in for a real good shout of potentially, you know, making this fight close and taking a very close decision or a split decision. But over five rounds, I don't see it. I hope Arnold Allen is that next wave. I hope he continues the win streak. Again, nothing against Max Holloway. I just really like Arnold Allen as a fighter. But I just think this is something too much, too soon for Arnold Allen. Not that he hasn't deserved it, but I just don't think that he's at that level to be fighting a Max Holloway at this point. I would have preferred to see Arnold Allen against Josh Emmett or against Yair Rodriguez and continue that build up in the division. I believe Arnold Allen's ceiling is very high. I think he will be at the top of the division in a couple of years' time. But right now, against this version of Max Holloway, who's showing no signs of slowing down or decline, I'm just struggling to see him win. So for those reasons, I'm picking Max Holloway to win this fight. And in the next fight, the co-main event, this is actually a real fun one. And again, a step up in competition for one of the two fighters. We've got Edson Barboza versus Billy Quarantillo. And I think it's a perfect fight because I feel for Barboza, the step down in competition is probably needed. And again, that's Barboza just potentially coming towards the end of his career. He's definitely closer to the end than he is his prime. So I think it's a good step down for Barboza. But for Billy Quarantillo, I think it's a good step up in competition. I think it's going to make for a real fun fight. The one thing that you do have to take into consideration on both sides, though, is the level of competition that these fighters have been fighting. So Barboza's been losing against Giga Chikadze, he's been losing against Bryce Mitchell, whereas Billy Quarantillo has been beating guys like Alexander Hernandez, Gabriel Benitez, Spike Carlisle. So there's a big difference in where both of these fighters have been fighting before they meet each other inside the cage, and I do feel that that is a factor. But what makes this fight so fun is both fighters break their opponents, just in slightly different ways though. And again, this is what makes the fight really interesting. Edson Barboza breaks his opponents with brutal kicks to the legs, to the body, to the head, just putting a barrage of some of the hardest, most powerful kicks that we've ever seen in the UFC. Look what he did to Dan Hooker. He absolutely destroyed Dan Hooker, picked him apart, broke him in multiple areas. Then on the other side with Billy Quarantillo, this is a fighter that breaks fighters with pressure and volume and cardio. So this is a fighter that'll be in your face, overwhelming pressure, being in your face, landing shots. They're not necessarily the hardest shots, but the volume that he puts out there, the fact that he's durable and he can eat these shots coming back on his opponents as well, just breaks the morale of the opponent. So this is what I mean. You've got someone like Edson Barboza who breaks fighters with raw power, and then you've got Billy Quarantillo that breaks fighters with pressure and cardio, with his gas tank, his durability. And I feel like when these two meet inside the cage, we're going to see this battle. Now, the thing is for me, the one worry that I have for Edson Barboza is how he was beaten against Bryce Mitchell. He was hurt in that fight as well. Bryce Mitchell, not really known for his power. Billy Quarantillo, not really known for his power either. But with the pace and the pressure that Quarantillo is going to be putting on Barboza, the fact he's going to be able to walk through some shots as well, I do think that if any of these fighters is likely to break, it's probably the older fighter in Edson Barboza, the fighter that is edging towards the end of his career. Like I've already mentioned, he's closer to the end than he is his prime. Now, if the fight plays out and we see Barboza just destroy the legs of Quarantillo early and go to the body early and really hurt Quarantillo, then Barboza, we could see another version of that Dan Hooker fight where Barboza absolutely rolls through Billy Quarantillo in that type of fight. It's just, I don't know how many of those performances that Barboza's got left. And with Quarantillo, he will be closing the distance. He will be the one moving forwards. Moving backwards is going to be harder for Barboza to be getting off on his kicks and landing a ton of kicks, especially if Quarantillo's closing that kicking range into the boxing range as well. I think Quarantillo's going to have those advantages in the boxing range. So I feel like the range, the pressure and the forward movement of Quarantillo is going to play a big part in this fight. Like I said, I'm not going to be surprised if Edson Barboza breaks Billy Quarantillo, but I do think that Quarantillo, although he's not as skilled as a fighter, this is mixed martial arts and there's a lot more variables and aspects to consider in analysis than just who's the better skilled fighter. Because Billy Quarantillo is going to be in the face, he's got that zombie-like approach, he's going to be coming forwards, it's going to limit what Barboza can do, and I think that's going to be the factor here. So for those reasons, I'm picking Billy Quarantillo to win this fight. And in the next fight, another fun one, we've got Dustin Jacoby versus Azamat Mirzakhanov. Now, Dustin Jacoby coming off that, in my opinion, robbery against Khalil Rountree. I had 3.5 units on Dustin Jacoby as well in that fight. And man, I'm not getting into the judges. We haven't got enough time on the podcast. But yeah, on the flip side, Azamat Mirzakhanov is coming off that really good win against Devin Clark. So look, coming into taping this fight, when I saw the betting lines, Dustin Jacoby still around where he is now is about minus 200. Mirzakhanov is around plus 170. So I went into tape thinking, you know, Mirzakhanov might be a good plus money play, a good underdog at plus 170. Even though I've been high on Dustin Jacoby and I've bet him over his last few fights, like maybe 3 or 4 fights I think I've bet him on. I've been high on him when a lot of people haven't. You know, he's got real good skills. But coming out of tape, you know, I understand where the betting line is where it's at. Azamat Mirzakhanov against Devin Clark, even against Afon Chukwe. Listen, I bet Mirzakhanov against Chukwe as well, and I feel very fortunate that I got that win. And, you know, Mirzakhanov was losing that fight. And then he pulled out that massive flying knee that hurt Afon Chukwe in the third round, and he won. And then against Devin Clark, I laid off a little bit. But Mirzakhanov, again in that fight, you know, what I remembered before tape is Mirzakhanov coming in, landing takedowns, landing bombs on Devin Clark, looking like a totally different fighter than the Tafon Chukwe fight. But actually, when I watched tape, I didn't remember it right, which is the reason why we watch tape, right? So Mirzakhanov was still, you know, his volume lacks a lot. He's got power, but he seems to wait for that one big shot. He seems to try and wind up. And if he does start missing his punches, then he can gas out. That's what he did against Chukwe. Now, against Devin Clark, he wasn't missing his punches. And I think that's what allowed for his cardio to be really good in that fight. But he was hurting Devin Clark. You know, he landed a couple of big bombs on his chin. Devin Clark wasn't going anywhere, so Mirzakhanov started going to the body. And credit to Mirzakhanov for that, by the way, because that was a real good read in that fight. And, you know, it paid off for him because he ended up winning the fight because of the reads. The thing is, against Dustin Jacoby here, Dustin Jacoby is going to be landing the volume. He's going to be the more active fighter. He's going to be the fighter that's moving around a little bit more. I think if Mirzakhanov does try to wrestle him, I think Dustin Jacoby's got decent defensive wrestling. If he does get taken down, Jacoby does a good job of getting his back to the cage, using the cage wall, standing back up to his feet. So I don't think that any wrestling and grappling from Mirzakhanov here is going to play a big factor in, you know, him winning the fight, should he win. I do think the fight is going to be contested on the feet. Dustin Jacoby, again, a real good kickboxer, initially left MMA, went to kickboxing, then came back to MMA. So he's got that kickboxing background as well as an MMA background as well. I think he's just going to land more volume here. The only thing is, and you've just got to question it, you know, you look back at Jacoby's last fight against Khalil Rountree, Jacoby landed way more strikes. He was the way more active fighter. He seemed to be the more efficient striker, but Khalil Rountree landing maybe a handful of big punches throughout the three rounds, that had to be the only reason Khalil Rountree won, because he did nothing else apart from just land a couple of big punches in each round. And those couple of big punches that didn't rock or knock Dustin Jacoby down, those big punches just outweighed the entire volume and activity of Jacoby. So maybe Mirzakhanov can pull off that sort of win should the fight go to the scorecards. But listen, I just don't think it's going to play out like that. I think, like I said, I think Jacoby was just unlucky to get that not to get the win last time out. I think that performance on 10 other nights in 10 other UFC events, Jacoby wins that fight way more often than he doesn't against Roundtree. So I personally think he's going to go in here, defend any takedowns from Mirzakhanov that might come his way. I think he's going to make Mirzakhanov miss big punches as well with his defense just stepping out of range. And I think that's going to tire Mirzakhanov out. I think even if it doesn't tire Mirzakhanov out, I think Jacoby's still going to be more active. He's still going to be the better mover. He's still going to land more volume. And I think he could really hurt Mirzakhanov with the accumulation of volume as well. And I know Jacoby technically does have that one punch knockout power. We've seen it. So again, the finishing upside on Jacoby from the one punch power. Mirzakhanov's got one punch power as well. But when it comes to the volume and the accumulation, I think Jacoby's got another way to knock Mirzakhanov out there as well, especially in a fight where I've already mentioned, in my opinion, is going to be won and lost on the feet. So for those reasons, I'm picking Dustin Jacoby to win this fight. And in the next fight in the light heavyweight division, really crucial that I've mentioned that, we've got Iwan Kutalaba versus the fighter coming down in weight, Tanner Boza. The fighter who gave a lot of people shit when they questioned why he doesn't fight at light heavyweight and why he doesn't cut down and why he stays at heavyweight. That's the fighter that's finally coming down to light heavyweight. And I think he's making the best move as well, to be honest, because if you're weighing in at around 229 pounds, I think the last weighing he had, you're giving up way too much size. And I know that you make up for that size and strength and power in speed, movement, and being a bit more elusive than these heavyweights. But, you know, fighters are evolving. And some of these heavyweight fighters at 265 pounds actually move very fast and very quick themselves. So it's the right move for Tanner Boza to come down. And actually, I saw a picture of him on social media and he looks like, well, obviously he's lost a ton of weight to start coming down to 205, but his body frame, you know, you're seeing some abs and you're seeing him in really good shape. So he does look good for coming down at 205, at least visually from a physique perspective. But from a stylistic perspective, I think that he might have a few issues here because, you know, you look at Tanner Boza where he struggles in mixed martial arts, and we've seen it in the UFC on multiple occasions. He can get taken down. When he's taken down, he can get controlled. He can lose plenty of seconds, plenty of minutes. He can lose rounds just by being on bottom and struggling to get back up to his feet. Now, I actually don't think he's got a bad get-up game, but he just doesn't seem to have the urgency to get back up to his feet. And maybe that's just because there's a big, massive 265-pound heavyweight on top of him, and, you know, he struggles for that reason. But it just doesn't look like he even was starting to use, you know, the jiu-jitsu technique of getting onto a hip, starting to try and, you know, technical escape or pushes back to the cage, use the cage wall to stand back up. There just seemed to be no urgency there. And it is a big red flag here against Kutalaba, because Kutalaba, look, he doesn't win many fights, and I understand that. But you've got to look at some of the fighters that has been beating him. Pretty much every fighter, maybe apart from Johnny Walker, and this is if you're being harsh to Johnny Walker, because Johnny Walker on any given night might be able to knock any light heavyweight out. But these fighters that are beating Kutalaba are at the top of the division. You know, just for example, the two losses in his, you know, losing streak have come to Magomed Ankalaev, who is still one of the best fighters in the division, who still is a future champion in my opinion. So Iwan Kutalaba, when he has that step down in competition, he tends to do quite well. And actually, even in some of the step-ups, you look at the Ryan Spann fight, you look at the Kennedy and Zechikou fight, and even in that Johnny Walker fight, the fights that Kutalaba is losing, he's actually doing really well up until the point that he loses and being really dominant. And, you know, that again, that's got to be taken into consideration. But here against Tanner Boza, he's got that step down in competition. So this is where I feel like it's the type of fight that Kutalaba normally does really well in. Now, Kutalaba's also still got this reputation of being this crazy, wild-ass fighter that just wings big hooks, that's absolutely nuts and will empty his gas tank in round one. But that's not the case. You know, you look back at his last, you know, three or four fights, and this guy is looking for takedowns, he's looking for top control, he's finally using this wrestling background that we got told he had years and years ago that just never came to fruition. So against someone like Tanner Boza, if this is Iwan Kutalaba's new type of fighting, his new style of fighting, then it's actually where Tanner Boza struggles against opponents, you know, getting taken down. And listen, Iwan Kutalaba actually does a decent job of, you know, getting into mount, landing ground and pound, really putting the pressure on his opponents. And this is before we've even spoke about his strike, and he's not a bad striker either. So against Tanaboza, the way I'm seeing this fight is I feel that on the feet striking, Tanaboza, for the first time, is not going to have this huge speed advantage against an opponent. And it might actually be the first time where he doesn't have a speed advantage at all, because Kutalaba is a very fast fighter. And Tanaboza, coming down in weight, he's going to lose some of that speed. The thing is, Boza might bring some heavyweight power with him. So this is something that, again, you've got to factor in. I feel on the feet striking, it's going to be close. I feel like both fighters could find the knockout. But where this fight starts getting interesting is when the martial arts start getting mixed up, when the wrestling starts, when the grappling starts. That fighter that's more likely to take the fight there is Kutalaba, and he actually has some strengths there against Boza, who has some weaknesses there. And I feel like Kutalaba and his team are going to have watched tape on Boza. They're going to know this. So when I'm looking at who I think is going to win this fight, I think stylistically it's in the favour of Kutalaba. The only concern that I've got with Kutalaba is he has been winning a number of fights until he loses. So maybe he just has that. Again, we've seen it with a couple of other fighters, you know, previously. Some fighters just start really well and then are mistake prone, error prone. I don't know what it is, but they end up losing the fight after starting really well. Maybe Kutalaba falls into that category, but I'm not convinced until I see it against a lower level of competition like Tanaboza. And I don't mean any disrespect to Boza by, you know, this is a step down in competition. I just mean that Boza's not up there, in my opinion, with Renzetcha Cruz. He's not up there with Ryan Spann. He's not up there with Ankalaev. He's more on the level of your Devon Clark type of fighters, you know, your mid-range fighters, where Kutalaba actually sits himself. And that's why he has a better job and does a better job against these mid-level light heavyweight fighters. But like I said, stylistically, from what I've seen, Kutalaba is going to have a lot of advantages, wrestling and grappling. That's where historically we've seen that Tanaboza struggles. So for those reasons, I'm picking Iwan Kutalaba to win this fight. Next up, this is a fun one as well. We've got Pedro Munhoz versus Chris Gutierrez. And again, this is one of these types of fighters where, you know, the fighter that's been fighting at the top end of the division for a very long time is finally taking a step down in competition against a fighter who is on his way up to potentially be fighting the top end of the division. Pedro Munhoz, I think he's 37 now, so he's definitely getting up there in age. He's had the wars, he's had the fights at the top end of the division. He's likely been in a couple of title eliminator fights as well, where if he'd have won the fight, he'd have been up there in conversation next to fight for a title. Chris Gutierrez, though, is a fighter on the rise. And what's real interesting about both of these fighters is both of their real strong aspects of the striking game are the low kicks. Both fighters have absolutely crippled previous opponents with hard calf kicks, you know, shutting down the leg, getting their opponent on one leg, dropping them. And it's going to be really interesting from that perspective alone of who's going to win the calf kick battle. The thing is with Munhoz and Chris Gutierrez, they've both got games built around that, and I like that. Both are really good strikers, both are patient, both make good reads, both don't really make too many errors inside the cage. They've both got good fight IQ, and I do think it's actually a really well-matched fight, but I do tend to lean on the side that this might be a little bit too much of a step up for Chris Gutierrez against Pedro Munhoz. And the thing is, although Pedro Munhoz is getting up there in age, and again, like I said with Edson Barboza, Munhoz is definitely closer to the end of his career than he is his prime, but I'm seeing no real signs of decline. Sure, Munhoz has lost his last couple of fights against Jose Aldo, Dominic Cruz, but both of those fighters, even though, you know, Aldo's now gone over to boxing and Dominic Cruz has just come off that loss against Marlon Vera, actually, Jose Aldo and Dominic Cruz are still really good fighters, and it's no shame that Munhoz is losing those. What would be concerning for me is if Pedro Munhoz was getting knocked out, he was getting rocked and wobbled and dropped all over constantly and really not being able to take too much of a punch or too much punishment, or being in the wars where he's just not got the durability for it. And the thing is, we aren't seeing that from Pedro Munhoz. I think Pedro Munhoz is still a quick mover. I think he's still fast on the feet. I think he still puts good volume together. And I think that although Chris Gutierrez is absolutely going to have his moments in this fight, there's no doubt about that. This is not going to be any sort of whitewash. Chris Gutierrez is going to be competitive. I just think the experience and the veteran qualities of Munhoz, and the fact that he does still have that speed, that volume, and that ability to mix it with the best in the division, I don't think he's ever going to be anywhere close to in contention for a title fight or anything, but I still think in and around that top 10 to 15 that he's going to be very competitive with some very good fighters. I think that Chris Gutierrez is going to have his moments, but I think Pedro Munhoz doesn't or hasn't shown that decline to the point where, you know, he just can't compete from a durability perspective and, you know, getting hurt and all that sort of stuff. So I think Pedro Munhoz has still got some in the tank for sure. And I think because he's fast, because he's got good movement, because he's got good volume, he can dart in and out of range, he's still got that good speed and movement. I just think Munoz's experience and veteran qualities are going to get him through this fight. So for those reasons, I'm picking Pedro Munhoz to win this fight. Next up, we've got Clay Guida versus Rafa Garcia. Rafa Garcia is actually starting to really turn it up in the UFC as well, and we're starting to see a decent fighter. And he's also got some good UFC wins under his belt as well. Whereas Clay Guida, on the other hand, I think Clay Guida is a fighter that you are struggling to know 100% what you're going to get inside the cage. He's a fighter that is aging. He's not only got so many fights under his belt, so many miles on the clock, but he's also been in so many wars. And at some point in your career, that's really going to catch up on you. And I think Clay Guida, with age, with the wars he's been in and how many fights that he's had, the miles on the clock, I think are all going to start adding up at some point. Do I think he's shot? Do I think he's declined to a point where I don't think he can be competitive in a fight like this? No, absolutely not. I still think Guida's going to have something for Rafa Garcia. I still think he's going to be competitive. But I just think that Garcia's going to be able to have success in a lot of areas in this fight. I think the striking's going to be close, but again, I think that Clay Guida probably utilises more movement than he does volume, whereas Rafa Garcia, I think he'll be able to deal with that volume. I think he'll be able to fire back at Guida. Then, look, if Guida starts wrestling, I think he could take Garcia down, but Garcia's got decent defensive wrestling, good anti-wrestling, and he's actually not bad from a get-up game perspective as well, whereas if Garcia takes Clay Guida down, I think Garcia's got a level of jiu-jitsu where Clay Guida could potentially make a mistake. Garcia might be able to get him out with a submission. You know, Clay Guida's been submitted a lot in his career. And again, that's not a knock on his jiu-jitsu. It's just when a fighter has better jiu-jitsu than Guida, that's where he can normally be got at. And I kind of feel that Garcia's got better jiu-jitsu than Guida, even though that's not Garcia's predominant style of his game. Garcia is one of these all-round type of fighters where he'll be happy striking, but does love to wrestle, and then he can get his grappling going. Garcia's grappling's not perfect, but I just think that when it comes to paths to victory in this fight, I think if this was a 15-minute kickboxing fight, I think Garcia could do a good job against Clay Guida. Clay Guida will absolutely have his moments in that fight, and he will in this fight, obviously, as a mixed martial arts fight. But I think if it's also a fight where it predominantly takes place on the mat with the wrestling and the grappling as well, I think that Garcia does a better job there as well. So I think Garcia's got a couple of paths to victory here. It isn't going to be a walk in the park. Guida's never going to let it go easy for any fighter to beat him. But I do think Rafa Garcia has the skills, qualities and stylistic abilities to beat Clay Guida at this stage in Clay Guida's career. So for those reasons, I'm picking Rafa Garcia to win this fight. Next fight, we've got TJ Brown versus Bill Aljo. Now, this is a fight that really could take place anywhere. Like, both fighters can strike, both fighters can wrestle, both fighters like to grapple as well. And yeah, it's just one of those fights where I'm struggling to see and predict exactly where this fight is going to be won and lost. And I kind of feel like we're going to have a bit of, you know, everything in this fight, an element of everything. So from a striking perspective, you know, TJ Brown, he will come forwards, he will look to land strikes on his opponents, look to land a low kick, but he tends to land the majority of strikes inside the pocket, whereas Bill Aljo is a little bit more free-flowing. The one aspect of Aljo striking that I don't like is his hands-down approach, but he's one of those fighters where it just kind of works for him. You know, he's got a certain style and his hands down works towards his style. If Bill Aljo just had this, you know, his hands up like, you know, a boxer would, for example, I just don't think he'd be as fluid with his movement and, you know, flow with his striking as well as what he does. And that's the thing with Aljo, he'll switch stances. He's very light on his feet. He'll come forward. He'll land some good strikes. I mean, look at his last fight against Feely. He outstruck Feely. You know, I bet Feely in that fight. You know, I thought Feely absolutely won. I'm shocked that a judge even gave Aljo that split decision on his scorecard. But look, Aljo mixing it with someone like Feely, who is one of the better fighters in the division, I think shows volumes to where he is with his striking. And like I say, talking of volumes, Aljo outlanded him. But then when it comes to your wrestling, the grappling, look, Aljo doesn't wrestle too much, but he's definitely got a wrestling background, so he can wrestle, tends to use it more from a defensive perspective. So in this fight, I feel like TJ Brown's the more likely fighter to start shooting takedowns. Now, when this fight hits the mat, I do think there's a gap in skill here. I think Aljo is the much better grappler. And although technically TJ Brown's a black belt, anybody that's been watching MMA in the UFC for a long time knows that black belts come in different levels. So I think that Aljo is a better level of black belt than what TJ Brown is. Aljo is very tricky to deal with on the mat. I mean, look at him against Herbert Burns. He survived that triangle that looked 100% locked in against Herbert Burns, caused Herbert Burns problems on the mat once he got out of that triangle as well. And Herbert Burns is a high-level BJJ player. Even his brother Gilbert Burns will tell you that Herbert Burns is the better technical BJJ player. Then you look at the Andre Feely fight. You know, Andre Feely did take Aljo's back, but again, had a choke locked in. Aljo wasn't taken out of there. And actually, like I said, one of the judges tried giving Aljo that round just because of the strikes Aljo was landing whilst Feely had his back. So look, Aljo's a tricky grappler to deal with. And this is what is a concern for TJ Brown, because Brown does make mistakes on the mat. He's hit and miss, though. Some fights, Brown can look great with his grappling, dominant, will look for submissions. But then in other fights, you know, when he's fighting a slightly better quality grappler, he will make mistakes, he will rush positions, he will get swept, reversed. And I feel like this is one of those fights that's just going to be a little bit messy for TJ Brown. On the feet, I think Brown is probably going to have his better moments, but I think Aljo on the feet is going to land some good strikes. He's been in there and outstruck better strikers than TJ Brown. Then when it comes to the wrestling, that's more likely going to be Brown advancing with the wrestling, but I think Bill Aljo is going to be able to have some success potentially reversing and re-wrestling and getting on top of TJ Brown. TJ Brown's on top of Aljo. I think he might be able to do some good work, but again, he's always going to be a risk of Aljo reversing the position. And Aljo, for me, is just the better grappler as well. So I think when you're looking at this fight, I think you've got a fighter like Aljo who's probably going to be okay striking, will land more volume. He's durable. He's got that, again, I said it with Bill in Quarantillo earlier, that zombie-like type of style where he will be in a fight and he will walk forwards. But then I think Bill Aljo's grappling is going to shine in this fight as well. So for those reasons, I'm picking Bill Aljo to win this fight. And in the next fight, one of the best fights on the entire card. I've got absolutely no idea why it's so low down on the card. We've got Brandon Royval versus Mateus Nicolau. Two fighters that I absolutely love in this flyweight division. Two fighters that I've won money on. In fact, I don't think I've lost money on either fighter. I could be wrong. I'd have to check my record on BetMMA.tips. But two fighters that I've won plenty of money on. I bet both of underdogs as well. Couple of favourites. So look, I love both fighters. And for me, it sucks that they're both actually fighting each other. But when it comes to the stylistic approach here from this fight, like, it's really, really intriguing. On the feet, I think Nicolau is absolutely the better striker, better boxer. I think he's got more power. I think Royval's maybe a little bit more elusive on the feet, or maybe a little bit awkward, I think is probably the right word to use. He'll dart in and out of range, come at weird angles, and he'll crash into the pocket. And I think that's where Nicolau could potentially just sit back a little bit, counter-strike, allow Royval to come at him and hit Royval when he gets in range. That's going to be a big factor for me in this fight. However, I do think we're going to see moments of wrestling and grappling here. I do think we're going to see, you know, the grappling exchanges being quite wild. Nicolau and Royval are both world-class grapplers in MMA, in the UFC. I think both will have moments where they're looking good in regards to the grappling. I think Royval's probably the better raw grappler, but the problem with Royval is because he's like a million miles an hour when it comes to the grappling, the transitions, floating from position to position, looking for submissions. He does leave opportunities for another good grappler that he's fighting to be able to find the holes or find the slight spaces to escape, burst into, try and reverse a position. And I think Nicolau could take advantage of that. So listen, if Royval does stay calm and composed on top, if this fight does hit the mat, I think Royval could do a really good job on Nicolau and make it really difficult for Nicolau, who can sometimes get stuck when a fighter's on top of him with heavy pressure and refusing to move too much. The thing is, that's just not Royval's style. Royval does like moving, he does like transitioning, he does like being this chaotic scrambler and grappler. And I kind of think that Nicolau, that plays into how Nicolau would want his opponent to fight him, and that's important. So now we're looking at the grappling where Royval could have some good moments. I don't think he gets Nicolau out of there with the grappling, and in turn I think he's going to leave Nicolau with opportunities to be able to get on top of him. And then when you look at the striking, I think Nicolau's the slightly better striker, so I do understand why Nicolau is the favourite in this fight, because he does have, you know, skill set advantages over Royval, and it's actually for those reasons. Look, it sucks for me to say this, and you know, I hate picking against either Royval or Nicolau, but the bottom line is one of these men, one of these fighters has got to win the fight, and I'm picking Mateus Nicolau to win this fight. And in the next fight, I feel like we've been taken back to 2015 or something here. We've got Ed Herman versus Zach Cummins. Ed Herman hasn't fought in 3 years. Zach Cummins hasn't fought in 2 years. Both fighters have been around the game for years and years. Ed Herman, 42 years old. Zach Cummins, 38 years old. So it's a real interesting fight to make. Like, I'm kind of glad the UFC have actually matched this fight, though, because the last thing that we want for a 42-year-old and a 38-year-old both coming off long layoffs is, you know, being put in there with some young, hungry gun that's just going to look to try and take the chin off. You know, I feel like the UFC have matched this really well, really fairly, and it's going to be a really good fight. I think it's going to be a dirty fight, a gritty fight, an ugly fight where both fighters are biting down on the mouthpiece, are really digging in, trying to get the win. I just feel that Zach Cummins is going to be slightly ahead of Ed Herman, probably at all times. And when you look at, you know, the striking, the wrestling, the grappling, I kind of feel like Zach Cummins has probably got advantages in all of those areas. Maybe not so much the grappling, but the thing is, Cummins is the more likely fighter to wrestle, in my opinion, which means that if he's on top of Herman, the grappling of Cummins should allow him to remain safe from Herman. Not that Herman's this BJJ ace. I'm just trying to pick out, you know, areas where I feel like both fighters could have success. And I think it is going to be competitive, but like I said, I've got a funny feeling Zach Cummins is going to be ahead at, you know, for the majority of the fight. Striking, I think that as long as Cummins minds his P's and Q's here, he's probably going to have more volume, he's the better quality fighter, who's probably going to be more crisp with more technique from that boxing perspective as well, mixing in some low kicks. And like I say, if there's any wrestling, I feel like Cummins is the more likely successful wrestler in this fight, therefore he's the more likely fighter to end up on top. Again, it's going to be one of those, it's going to be really interesting, especially for Cummins, because he's the one that hasn't fought for the 3 years, whereas Ed Herman hasn't fought for 2 years. So I think that, yeah, you know, Cummins is also the younger fighter as well. So I kind of feel like Cummins is going to be a little bit more cautious and just fight to win, you know, fight safe in moments if he needs to, but do what he needs to do just to get that win. I think he's at a slightly better stage in his career as well. So for those reasons, I am siding with Zach Cummins to win this fight. And in the next fight, this is interesting from a betting perspective. We've got Piera Rodriguez versus Gillian Robertson. Gillian Robertson, so the reason why I said it was interesting from a betting perspective is because she opened up decent plus money as an underdog, but now the line has started to flip. It's a little bit of a pick'em in some spots. So depending on where you're looking, depends on obviously what betting lines you get, but it is pretty much a pick'em at the time of me recording this podcast. And to be honest, I do understand why people had bet Gillian Robertson into this pick'em from the plus money. Like, it's one of these types of fights. We saw it a few weeks ago, Jennifer Meyer against Casey O'Neill. You know, the veteran, in these women fights, the veteran fighter against the up-and-coming women fighter, it's just very difficult for these up-and-coming fighters to actually deal with these women that have been around the game for years, been experienced and fought the top-level competition. Even you look back at last weekend, and I kind of don't want to remember this too much, but, you know, I had a bet on Michelle Waterson-Gomez, who, in my opinion, absolutely beat Luana Pinheiro. You know, I just cannot understand how the judges didn't see it like that. But again, not got a lot of time for the judges on the podcast. But again, it was one of these types of fights where, you know, Luana Pinheiro in that fight was the younger up-and-coming fighter with less experience, but, you know, the one that people are seeing with a higher ceiling against the veteran, and the veteran having a really good performance. And I kind of feel like, again, we've got a similar fight here with Piera Rodriguez versus Gillian Robertson. Now, it's actually a really good fight, though, because I think that Piera Rodriguez genuinely is a good fighter. She's got good boxing, she's got good wrestling, she's got good top control. So she is a very complete fighter, but she's also got aggression and power to go with that as well. The thing is with Gillian Robertson, at this point, she's kind of a specialist. But within that being said, she's a specialist that can make some mistakes in that specialist area as well. So the mistakes do only tend to come against other good grapplers. And that's where she specializes. She specializes in a grappling. Wrestling's okay. She can get fights down to the mat. But Robertson really does a good job on the mat grappling. But like I said, from time to time, if she's fighting another good grappler, another very capable grappler, she can make a mistake and she can get reversed and get put on her back herself. And it was actually weird for a while because a lot of her wins were coming from grappling, but a lot of her losses were coming from grappling as well. Now, with Piera Rodriguez, I think that she's going to be the better striker here. I think from a wrestling perspective, I think this fight is going to be close. I don't think any are really beast wrestlers, but both do have, you know, a good record and do a good job of being able to ground their opponents and get fights down to the mat. So the grappling is going to be really key. I just feel that Gillian Robertson's probably going to be the more active wrestler, the more urgent fighter to get the fight down to the mat than Rodriguez, who can sit on a boxing. She can rely on a boxing to beat Robertson, whereas, you know, Robertson, I feel, has to be the fighter to try and get that fight down to the mat. And that, for me, is where I'm starting to lean over to the Robertson side. I think it's going to be a close and competitive fight, and I think the grappling exchanges are going to be really intriguing. I kind of get why it's settled and stuck at a pick 'em, if I'm being honest. But although Rodriguez does have some grappling qualities, I think as long as Robertson minds her P's and Q's, I think she is going to be able to get a couple of takedowns in this fight, potentially take the back of Rodriguez, lock her in on the back, and then just win minutes of the rounds and obviously be a submission threat as well. So I do sit on the Robertson side, but I think Piera Rodriguez is definitely a fighter that isn't, you know, a fighter that's going to crumble on this step up in competition. I think she's going to be competitive. But for the sake of the pick and the prediction, I'm picking Gillian Robertson to win this fight. And in the next fight, an interesting fight with the way the UFC have matched this, we've got Lando Venata versus Daniel Zellhuber. So Zellhuber coming off that loss to Trey Ogden. Zellhuber was a big favourite to win that fight. A lot of people expected a lot of big things from Zellhuber. And I honestly think it was very typical of a UFC debut fighter getting debut jitters and just not being able to fight to A, the full potential, and B, you know, fight competitively and just let things go. And as a striker, when you're not letting things go, you're not going to win the fight, and you're going to be put in under pressure and you're going to come a little bit unstuck. And I'm not giving Zellhuber a massive excuse for what happened last time out, but I genuinely think. I think it was just debut jitters. He wouldn't let it go. He was struggling to let it go. He was under the bright lights and he just didn't perform to his full ability. This fight, he's got to be different, because again, if he's nervous coming into this fight, and obviously he's not going to have the debut jitters because it's not his debut, but he might have some nerves, he might have some jitters thinking, well, he's got to redeem himself from that last fight. But I don't think it can be any worse than that last fight. And I think at least here with Venata's a fighter that will come at you, be in your face, will mix things up. He'll at least force Zellhuber to fight, whereas Trey Ogden was a little bit, I think Trey Ogden knew what he was doing. He knew that Zellhuber was struggling to let it go, and he was able to really slow the fight down and, you know, pick his shots and make Zellhuber just slowly fall behind, which, you know, from a mental perspective, must have hurt Zellhuber in the fight as well. But Lando Venata is going to bring the fight. But it's a good match made fight, because Lando Venata, like I said, he will bring the fight to everybody he fights. He's got decent striking. He's got that wrestling background that we never really see, just because he likes to be exciting in regards to, you know, throwing big strikes, spin attacks, knocking his opponent out. He's also got decent grappling as well, Lando Venata. So I think from a mixing it up perspective, Venata's definitely the more likely fighter to mix it up. I don't think Zellhuber's got terrible takedown defense. I also think he can get back up as well. And he's also strong and big for the division. So I think that Zellhuber might be able to, look, I think Lando Venata could take Zellhuber down should he want to, but I don't think the fight's going to be won and lost on the wrestling or the grappling of this fight. I think it's going to be won and lost on the striking. And although Lando Venata's game, he's got knockout power, he can drop his opponents and really mix things up, I think if Zellhuber's on his game like he should be, like he has to be, and like we saw outside of the UFC, if If Zellhuber shows up and decides to let it go and doesn't let nerves or jitters get the better of him, I think he could actually put on a pretty special performance here against Lando Venata and just make everybody forget about that Ogden loss with a win. Because this is a step up in competition as well. Like, Lando Venata's a step up from Trey Ogden. So if Daniel Zellhuber goes out here and beats Venata, then that loss is pretty much wiped from Zellhuber's mind and a lot of the fans' mind and the UFC's mind as well. And we can just put that to bed as a UFC debut jitters type of fight. I think Zellhuber could look really good in this fight, unless Venata starts being relentless with the wrestling. But he's just not that type of fighter. He could be relentless, and if he is, I wouldn't be shocked, because why would you not want to take Zellhuber down when you're going to have advantages in the wrestling and grappling department? But it's just not Venata's style, and I do think it's going to be a fight that is won and lost on the feet. I think Zellhuber's going to be a little bit quicker. I think he's going to be a little bit sharper. The punches are going to come a little bit straighter. So for those reasons, I'm picking Daniel Zellhuber to win this fight. In the next fight, we've got Bruna Brazil versus Denise Gomes. Interesting fight here. I think it's actually going to be pretty fun as well. Like, Bruna Brazil, she's a really good fighter, really tall, really long, height advantage, reach advantage, leg reach advantage, fights with her hands down, similar to what I said with Bill Aljo earlier. Not something you like to see. Kind of makes it work for herself though. And I think that she's got dangerous striking. The straight punches down the middle always seem to find a home, and that's because she's that long. But she's also got decent takedowns, trip takedowns from body lock. She can get on top of her opponents. I wouldn't say she's the most lethal grappler, but she's definitely got decent top control. And like I say, she's really awkward to fight just because of how tall she is. Denise Gomes, on the other hand, I think that she actually has got a style that's going to be competitive with Bruna Brazil. I think Gomes is aggressive on the feet. She'll come forward. She'll look to land power. And that's how you're going to get at somebody like Bruna Brazil. Denise Gomes also hasn't got bad takedown offense either, bad wrestling. She can get the fighters down to the mat. Her defensive jiu-jitsu, she can get a little bit stuck. We saw that last time out against Loma Lookboom-Me, where Loma just dominated on the mat. So this is where I feel like Denise Gomes is going to be competitive, and she's got that style to make this fight really interesting and make Bruna Brazil not simply run away with this fight over the course of three rounds, should it go three rounds. I think that Denise Gomes is going to provide a level of competitiveness that's really going to make Bruna Brazil work, which is good, because that's what we want to see from somebody like Bruna Brazil, who's got a little bit of hype behind her coming into the UFC. But I think Bruna Brazil's striking, I think because she can fight at that longer range on the outside and then still mix it on the inside with elbows, but then get these trip takedowns being the taller, longer fighter. And then Denise Gomes had issues against Loma Lookboom-Me from bottom. I think Bruna Brazil can replicate some of the success that Lookboom-Me had on top of her with her own top control. So I think that it is a fight that's going to be fun. I think it's going to be really interesting to see Bruna Brazil finally in the UFC. I think it's going to be a good fight against two Brazilians. But for me, I'm picking Bruna Brazil to win this fight. In the next fight, we've got UFC newcomer Gaston Bolaños versus Aaron Phillips. Bit of a strange fight, if I'm being honest. I'm not sure, you know, why Aaron Phillips is still in the UFC. And again, I don't mean any disrespect to Aaron Phillips. You know, I never mean any disrespect to these fighters. But from a UFC caliber perspective, I don't think Aaron Phillips is there. I kind of don't think Bolaños is there either, if I'm being honest as well. So it is a strange fight. And like I say, it could end up being a real fun fight because of how it's matched. And maybe the UFC are just wanting to find out exactly where both fighters are at in regards to, you know, the UFC and where they're going to go. And I think maybe the more promising fighter out of the two and the fighter that does look to be more solid is Gaston Bolaños. Bolaños has got decent power. You know, he can wrestle. He'll like to get on top of his opponents. And Aaron Phillips is a decent all-round fighter as well. But like I say, you know, you look back at Aaron Phillips's fights outside of the UFC, and he's against guys that don't look too great, that are hurting him and making him work. And yeah, I just struggle to see it for Aaron Phillips. And I hope I'm wrong, because I love that underdog story of a fighter that is improved and developed and, you know, surprising people. I just think that the UFC have matched this fight for a reason, to find out which one of these fighters that they potentially want to keep around and which one might not be quite there for them. And from the fact that I've seen Aaron Phillips hurt outside of the UFC, and Bolaños does have some power, I give the edge there. When it comes to the wrestling and grappling, I think that they're more well matched in these areas, but I think if Bolaños can get on top, Phillips could get potentially get a little bit stuck. So I am siding with Bolaños, and like I say, I really, really don't mean this fight in a disrespectful way, but just from a UFC quality perspective and how many fights that a fighter can actually win against UFC level competition in the current divisions, I think that both fighters are going to struggle moving forwards. But for this fight, as they're both matched together, I'm picking Gaston Bolaños to win this fight. And last up, this should actually be a pretty fun fight as well. We've got Jocelyn Edwards versus Lucy Pudlova. And yeah, interesting fight. Jocelyn Edwards, very tall, very long, will look to strike. Lucy Pudlova does love to get into those positions where she can get inside a boxing range and brawl. She's been in some real exciting fights. I'm surprised that the UFC actually let her go, to be honest, and I'm really happy that they brought her back, because she is refreshing for this division in regards to just bringing excitement into the cage. But on her entry back into the UFC, she also brought a decent wrestling game with her as well. And you know, you go over to her Instagram, she's competing regularly in grappling tournaments under John Kavanagh, I believe, at SBG Ireland, who's a very good jiu-jitsu coach. And Lucy Pudlova will be developing and improving her grappling, and we saw that in a second UFC debut, if you like. Pudlova, once she hit the takedown, she was very good on top, and by competing in these gi grappling tournaments, I think she's a purple belt in BJJ now, so competing as a purple belt in these gi tournaments in grappling, I do genuinely think that it's going to be improving a grappling game inside of, you know, the UFC and MMA as well. Now, Jocelyn Edwards is actually also from her Instagram, seemingly an active grappler, also seemingly a purple belt as well. So it's going to be a really good fight from that perspective. But looking at MMA and nothing else outside of that, we've seen Jocelyn Edwards taken down and get stuck on her back. And I think Pudlova's got a really good opportunity here stylistically to be able to have real good moments in this fight. I think if she takes Edwards down, I think Pudlova's good enough on top to maybe make Edwards stuck on her back again, like we've seen in previous fights. And actually, where Jocelyn Edwards' bad performances have all come from in the UFC is when she's been taken down and put on her back. Even though she's a purple belt, there's going to be levels in that as well. I think Pudlova is going to be the better grappler in this fight. I think from a striking perspective, I think the fight could be close. Jocelyn Edwards has got good striking at range. She's tall, she's long, the straight punches come down the middle. But man, when Lucy Pudlova gets into that boxing range and starts ripping, you know, both fighters have got good striking styles, but different striking styles. I think it's going to be very close on the feet, and that's what's going to cause Pudlova to potentially start shooting takedowns. Once she gets a takedown, if she gets some good top control time and Edwards is stuck, I think Pudlova is just going to go back to the well until she wins the fight, whether that be a stoppage on the mat or whether that be a decision over three rounds. So for me, I'm picking Lucy Pudlova to win this fight. And that's all for this episode of the podcast. Once again, I apologize, it's gone over 50 minutes, but you know, we've got 15 fights to break down, a couple of really good fun fights that I wanted to spend a little bit more time on as well. So that's it for the podcast. If you are on or watching on YouTube, listening on YouTube, you want to leave a comment, tell me your predictions, tell me your picks, tell me who you're betting on. If we disagree on a particular fighter, tell me what fighter, what fight, and why you disagree with me. If I can get time to reply back to you guys, I do lead a pretty busy life, but if I can get back to you guys, of course, I will reply, and it will be me in the replies, not our marketing team. So drop a comment, drop a like. If you really enjoyed the show, please subscribe to the channel as well. All these things do really help. Aside from that, I'm Newsome. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you again next week.